Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men TV podcast, the podcast of champions. I am your host, Paul Machen. I am joined by a fellow champion, Mr. Chris Pajak. Hello. A fellow champion, Mr. Ben Kelly. Hello.
Hello.
And a fellow champion, Mr. James Sutton as well. James, hello.
Yay.
Yeah, absolutely. The celebrations will doubtless continue throughout the show and throughout the rest of our lives. We're going to kick off question though first, and it comes from Jith. He says, you're allowed to play one full game from Liverpool's history, but you have your football skill set and you have to replace somebody from that team. The result will likely be different to the one that happened in real life. Which game do you pick? Which game do you pick, Chris Pajak?
I don't know the game, but any of them that Paul Konchesky played in, and I'll play left back. The likelihood is we lost a lot of games that season anyway with Roy in charge, so the result will change, not necessarily for the worse, though. And I like to think that, yes, I know that Paul Konchesky's probably a better left back than me, but my determination to succeed for Liverpool and the badge would put me in a pretty good standing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a pretty good Chelsea because I think you focused on the right thing there, is that you focused on who's the weakest link in the side and therefore what's the least level of drop-off likely to be.
Ben, and I accepted that we're going to lose the game. I'm going to pick a game where we lost anyway, so I can't fuck anything up.
Ah, clever. Okay, cool. Go on, Ben.
I had a similar train of thought, but for some reason I instinctively thought of Christian Poulsen in those Roy Hodgson side, but then I realised, sort of as Chris was talking there, that would involve me playing centre midfield and having to do a lot of running, and I'm not convinced that that is something that would go down well either. So so I think I agree with
Poulsen. Poulsen didn't do a lot of running, Ben.
I know, but that's the point. You should have done. He should have been doing a lot more than he did. All that Milan Jovanovic, I'll swap with him and try to see if I can bag myself a goal. I'll go with any game in the Roy Hodgson era where Christian Poulsen played, and I'll stick myself in defensive midfield. The back four.
Yeah, I like that. Tom, just use the comments section. So it comes up on screen rather than just fashioning. Sorry for listeners. Tom's fashioning handwritten notes to explain what should be happening.
He's not even
on
got
screen.
The instructions. He just wrote the name down and then gave the instructions.
Ben. Brilliant. Anyway, yes, James.
Similar to you guys, really. I mean, the question just becomes an exercise in who do I realistically think I'm a better footballer than? Really. So Charlie Adam is where my head's at. I can't for the fucking life of me work out why we got Charlie Adam in the first place or for what purpose, but I reckon I could do a similar, if not better, job at whatever it was that Charlie Adam was supposed to do.
The funny thing is, it's like you've thought about that for the last 10 years and you still, after thinking on it every single day, haven't worked out why Liverpool signed Charlie Adam.
If you'd like to leave anything in the comments section, we'd love to hear your thoughts on what Charlie Adam was for.
Yeah. Anyone want to proffer a good idea as to what his purpose was? It all, you know why? Because it was that fucking stupid Alex Ferguson line about his corners and free kicks are worth £10 million or whatever, which was just, it's like he's just having a laugh. Alex Ferguson basically justified Liverpool's valuation on it, but just so in case someone went, he's a bit crap, he can't run. He just looks very simple as well. He looks like he should be working on a farm in the 1800s.
Have you seen what he looks like now?
Oh God, yeah, he's the same age as Cristiano Ronaldo, isn't he? And he basically looks older than my dad.
He looks older than my dad. My dad's 52.
Can we count his teeth on like one hand? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks like the guy who played Rabsy Nesbitt. Absolutely. If he'd suffered and survived just a massive heroin addiction,
and then turned to shortbread instead.
Yeah. Well, I've got a couple of ideas for this, and just following on from the theme that we've got so far is I'd take one of Sean Dundee's substitute appearances, because you know you get to come into a Liverpool side that's got like you know Robbie Fowler and Steve McManaman and all that kind of stuff. Like, so you're probably getting to play with some of my boyhood legends and idols, and knowing full well that Sean Dundee offered zero zilch nada for the Liverpool side, so I'm not going to have any tangible impact one way or the other. Really, I'm more likely to have a positive impact than a negative one.
There's no pressure.
Yeah, exactly. And it means you probably get to play. I think one of them might have been an Anfield as well. I think I remember him coming on with a game I was on. And the only other one was one of the games where we absolutely tonked Everton everywhere. Like the games where we scored like four or five against them and just put me in for a sub or whatever, you know, and hope. I used to have a theory in the Sunday League team I used to play for, because our pitch was on a really bad hill, and you used to try and kick downhill first half and get a lead up, and then you knew you was going to get battered for the second 45 minutes. So I like the idea of playing in a game where we batter someone and then I come into the fold and Liverpool have just got to hold on to that massive lead for however long's left of the game before I catastrophically cock it up.
I like that. If that was the case, I'd probably go for the Besiktas game where Yossi Benayoun scored a hat-trick and then take Benayoun's place in said side. Get all the feelings of an 8-0 win at Anfield and none of the credit for it.
100%. Yeah, I think that's a great. I think that's such a good shout. Just pick a game. A Liverpool Crystal Palace 9-0 game. How badly wrong could that possibly go if you drop me in for any of the players? Like, I'll be the one who comes on for John Aldridge off for me in the last minute, or you know what I mean, something like that, and know that it'd be absolutely fine. Yeah, I think we've comprehensively covered that. But if anyone,
what if you were to do it and you genuinely needed to get a win in the game, and who would you take yourself off for? Is there a game where you trust yourself for just one 90 minutes? Let's say you can go into a year's worth of training prior to said game to get fitness levels up.
No amount of training makes up for a lack of talent, unfortunately. So I'm not sure that it would matter.
I've seen you play footy, Ben. You're all right. I don't know. I'm not having that. Ben's saying he hasn't got the talent.
Which is a concern, though, isn't it, Paul? Which is a concern. If Ben's all right, we think he's all right, and he doesn't think it. So because, like, you know, we're not better than Ben.
I don't think
I touched the ball.
The Champions League final against Madrid, and I'd go in for Karius because.
You reckon you're saving that bail one?
Oh God, no! But I reckon I'm also not throwing the ball into my own net. Like, I might not reach any of the shots, but at least no one will be able to. No, I don't think I'd be consistently blamed for.
Seen you throw the ball to the opposition in five-a-side, Paul.
Oh, I know.
Is it though?
I don't think it is.
The Champions League final. It makes exactly a difference. 100%. And if you shit the bed in a five-a-side game between your mates, you're going to shit the bed in a Champions League final.
That's different. That's why Klopp would never have had me as a player, because I don't train well. I've played well in big games. You've never played in any big games, so you wouldn't know. Right. Let's move on to the topics then. I want to start with the celebrations, both, you know, the good, the bad and the ugly. I want to talk about it all, really. And obviously I want to start rewinding the clock back to Thursday, Chris, and obviously, you know, what a surprisingly monumental feeling watching two teams that I have no affinity for play a game of football. Obviously we know what it ultimately led to, and obviously ultimately led to Liverpool winning the title, but I thought I'd get something from it, but I didn't realise quite how much I'd get from it. What about you?
No, same, mate. I was completely overwhelmed after the final whistle. Like, just didn't really know how to think anymore or what to say or anything. But, you know, I went into that game thinking that I really wanted Liverpool to win it at the Etihad. And as soon as the game kicked off, I found myself really, really wanting Chelsea to win. I just wanted it over and done with. And I didn't know it was going to feel like that until the game kicked off. And so every time, you know, it just felt like I was as invested in that as I have been in any game of football that I've ever watched.
Yeah,
which, you know, because we all get invested in Liverpool games. I've never felt like that watching a game that's not Liverpool before. I don't think ever.
Yeah, I think it's mad, isn't it? Because we spoke on our podcast about the return of the Bundesliga and not having that affinity for the football that you're watching, not being, and how much of a difference it makes knowing the players and being up on the story. Now, of course, the story wasn't about Chelsea and Man City. The story was about Liverpool, which made it more important. But like, I saw you, like, you know, you could see how emotional you were from. You can see the lads, you're referring to Tom dancing a jig over my shoulder and stuff, like, you know, we never thought, because I think all of us agreed, you know, you could play devil's advocate and make a case for it going that way. But deep down, we all wanted to see Liverpool win it, I thought it was just something else. And James, where were you in, where was your standing on that before the game? You know, did you want to see it won at the Etihad?
So, yeah, I think, yeah, prior to the game, I wanted to see us contribute to our own, you know, victory. But that being said, there was something utterly fucking delicious about watching City's title just slowly slide out of their grasp over 90 minutes whilst we just celebrated raucously. It was a funny one. It was a funny one. Similar to Chris, I didn't really know what to do with myself. It was bizarre. We all had lots of energy and celebrating, but weren't quite sure what to do with it. And now that a bit of time has passed, I think I feel relief now. I think that's my overriding emotion, actually. And I feel like we've been validated. I feel like for 30 years we've been telling anyone that will listen that we're the best team in the world and haven't backed that up over any prolonged period of time, and to finally have that where you go, actually, we are the best team in the world. It's there in print. I get a real sense of kind of relief and yeah, satisfaction from that, as opposed to kind of wild celebrations.
Yeah, I mean, what about you, Ben? Still, obviously, you're still having to take it a little bit easier physically at the moment. But yeah, I bet there was some severe thoughts that went into what you can and can't physically do on the night.
Oh, well, funnily enough, me and my dad watched the game in delay because we had some friends round for, you know, some socially distant garden sitting and a barbecue. So we watched it kind of like 2 hours behind everybody else. And as the game went on and I realised that actually City were playing quite poorly and this actually might be the night, I just slowly got more and more invested in the idea that actually tonight could be the night and this is going to be it. It was a little bit anticlimactic for me personally because I am at home at the moment and you just can't. I even if I wanted to go out and celebrate, I couldn't. So it was a little bit of a, oh, well, you know, that's just happened and now I'm sat on the couch and this is as good as it's going to get tonight. But, you know, then you get I got my phone back out because I've been avoiding the score and, you know, you've got all the messages from loads of people. And the bizarre thing, and this happened at the Champions League final last year, where people congratulate me as if I've done something, yes, as if I've achieved something. They go, oh, well done, mate. And I go, thanks. And, you know, as if it's my personal sheet. I always find that quite funny. But yeah, you get loads of people talk about it. And it just felt good. And I think I agree with James. It was that relief, I think, it is a big emotion in it. Because obviously, for months, there was this potential for the whole thing just blowing up into a ball of flames and not existing anymore. And suddenly to have those posts that, you see the Premier League Champions League posts and the official club and all that, just something that I never thought I'd see, and I was finally seeing those things. It was nice.
Yeah, it was it was such a weird experience because there was a point 24 hours earlier where we'd been having the conversations in the studio and saying, are we going to do something for it? And part of me was, my initial thought was, I don't I don't want us to do something for it, just in case City absolutely batter us, and it looks like we've done it to for that moment, which sounded a bit weirdly. But I got more and more, the more I thought about it, the more like happy and confidence and all that kind of thing became about it, because we were in a unique situation, really, weren't we, Chris? In so much as it kind of, I mean, Dad said this on the show we did with Jace Bearden yesterday. It didn't matter. We were going to win it anyway. Like, so this was just like a free hit. And I love, because one of the things Jay had said in the build-up to it was he wanted us to win at the Etihad for the players so that they had that sense of they've achieved it, they're all together and they've done it. And when you see that the players all got together, they were all there in Formby Hall and they were all celebrating together, that kind of, that tipped it over the edge for me. It made it even better.
Yeah, I love Jay's point in the build-up show about that, about how they'd all be together, because you wouldn't get to see what we saw with Leicester when they celebrated it, he was saying, wasn't he? And, you know, fair play to whoever decided to book that, because they probably only did that after the Palace game and they managed to get that sorted and get everyone together and all that type of stuff. And, you know, the players will buzz off that. They'll remember that for the rest of their lives. I know that, I think, was it Trent who was saying, like, you know, I kind of stopped drinking because I kind of wanted to remember that with my own memory of the evening more than anything else. Now, I'm not sure I believe him that he stopped drinking, but certainly he'll have wanted to remember that. And it was just great to see. And because they've done that, we get more out of that as well, because we see the little videos and then it's like, oh, there's another video that I've not seen yet. You're kidding me. Oh my God, there's another one. Yes, yes, yes. So all that as well, it all just adds to it. Whereas, like, I'd love to have seen the celebrations in the dressing room after the victory. I'd love to have been there, obviously, and seen the celebrations in front of us and then feel that adulation from the crowd. But for it is and where we are in the world right now, that's as good as I could imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it showed what we've always known, really, James, is that sense of unbelievable unity amongst the squads, and they managed to pull that off and pull them all together. And you can see one of the reasons why they're so emotional, the reason why Klopp's crying on the telly, the reason why Henderson's crying on the telly, the reason why, you know, it's this big outpouring of emotions, because they are all together, and that's what they've been on. And Klopp mentioned it in his open letter, I think, about the idea of what they are. It's like they all buy into everything, or it doesn't work. And I think the fact that they were able to be together and again seeing it typified it was Klopp's Liverpool through and through.
Yeah, and they didn't have wives and girlfriends or anyone else, you know, at that celebration that wasn't, you know, basically first team and Klopp and his coaches. So it was a really, really small group. I mean, I can't imagine what that must have felt like to, you know, to be away from everyone else, but it's you and your men, it's your boys. These are your boys. These are your lads that you've played for two seasons with now, you know, chasing this Premier League and come so close. To have that release and that must have been unbelievable, man. I mean, they deserve, you know, they deserve every plaudit and every success. But to have that, I think it won't make up for the fact that they didn't, you know, we weren't at Anfield to celebrate it with them. But I think, if anything, I think it might even bring them even closer together as a group, because they've experienced something that no one else has now.
Well, there's a point, Ben, that we're going to get to celebrate this twice, actually three times, four times maybe, because obviously the City games are looming. We'll touch a little bit on that toward the end of the podcast. But the, you know, we got to celebrate. We got to see the players celebrate. Then they go to the Etihad. If they beat Manchester City, we get to see them celebrating it. And then, you know, I guess the plan still to do the trophy lift at against Chelsea, I think. I think that was always the plan anyway, you know, second to the last home game. So I don't know whether, you know, there'll still be that. That's the thing that I took away from it. We could have felt a sense of disappointment that not seeing the players do it, but we get, it gets to kind of, we just get to draw the celebrations out a bit longer, really.
Exactly, yeah. You know, there was part of me that did want to win the game on Thursday to do the title, and obviously you do it by beating City. But, you know, if nothing else, the way it's happened, we've just had another week now where we're champions that we wouldn't have had before. I think what James was saying there, I thought was spot on. The other thing is that the release that they'll have had will have been made even better for them by the fact that they've actually just spent 3 months not being able to see each other at all, which you don't really take into consideration that the fact that, obviously, as well as teammates, they're all really good friends. And, you know, I think we've all learned over this period that doing it over Skype and Zoom isn't the same as seeing your mates in person. And they'll have had an opportunity there, even though they've been able to see each other to train and stuff for a couple of weeks now, there's still been a job to do. what a night that would have been to just put the worries and the trouble of the last 3 months sort of behind them a little bit and celebrate with the mates. And, you know, that's why I'm happy for them. You know,
to yeah. Special. Yeah. Well, I want to move things on. I want to talk about the wider celebrations. And obviously we saw trouble kicking off at the Pierhead on the Friday night. And obviously we'd seen people coming out on the Thursday. And look, I have to say, I've said it elsewhere. I went to Anfield on Thursday night. I felt compelled to do it. There was something about it. I just couldn't not go and see what it looked like, couldn't not go and experience it myself. So I understand, and I'm saying this clearly for everyone at home, I understand that I pass up my right to judge anyone else who goes to mass gatherings in the future or whatever. You know, you lose the moral high ground when you do these kind of situations. But I think it's interesting because obviously I think what with the trouble that came about on the Friday, and we've seen a young lad from Southport charged. He's going to be going in front of the courts for setting off the firework that was set at the larger buildings. Someone else been shot. There's been obviously a few people who were injured and what have you. I mean, Chris, I want to talk predominantly about the Friday because I actually think they're almost two separate things. But there was what I didn't like about it was ultimately the thing that I don't think anyone really liked about it was that it ended up, as always happens in situations, it's a small gang of idiots that ends up tarring an entire fan base.
Yeah, I disagree. I don't think they are two separate events personally. I think one doesn't happen without the other. I think the Thursday I understand more because it's spontaneous, but I don't think Friday happens without the Thursday personally.
And
then I think what you've got is what you've just said there. You know, we are always taught by a small percentage, but again, if people didn't gather, the small percentage wouldn't be able to do that. So the fact is, in every walk of life, when a huge gathering of people happens, it's always the small percentage. Well, if the gathering didn't happen, the small percentage don't have anything. You don't give them the air to breathe, almost, if you know what I mean. So I think it's really disappointing. I'm not about whataboutery in this situation. It's bad. It shouldn't have happened. They should be ashamed of themselves. Certainly the people who've set off the fireworks and caused damage to buildings, that it's just baffling to me that is even a thing. Certainly the people who were cheering these things, ridiculous. You know what I mean? And listen, I'm not saying I've never caught up in things before. I have plenty of times and I've regretted them. So these people can regret things. Yeah. I don't understand that. But yeah, it's really, really disappointing, especially after I thought most people understood the severity of the situation, and unfortunately they don't.
Yeah, it's one of them, isn't it, James, where I think, and I agree, I think the Friday happens because of the Thursday, but I think it's interesting because I think, only from first-hand experience on it, Thursday was a natural movement of people just... it was an explosion of joy. It was people just going, well, I need to do something. I need to get out. I think I agree with Chris. I think Friday happens where all the people who didn't go on Thursday and a lot of, you know, maybe genuinely want to support, because there were a lot of people who went to the Pierhead on Friday just looking to celebrate in a positive way, regardless of lockdown, you know, with lockdown and all that kind of stuff. The vast, vast majority of people went, you know, the people there with kids and people there to go and feel the emotion of it. But it happens, I think, a lot of it. The slightly more pre-planned element of it means there's going to be more dickheads, because there's just people who see, when you see something like that, you think, oh, I'll have a go at that. And that, like, it's how, and not to tie it into any other, into the BLM movement or anything, but it's how, like, rioting happens a lot of the time, is that people see what other people have gotten away with and they try other stuff themselves. So that's probably why there was a more dangerous element to the Friday compared to the Thursday.
Yeah, I do agree what you're saying about the Friday doesn't happen without Thursday, but I think you kind of summed it up when you were talking about, you went to Anfield on the Thursday, Paul, and you said that you felt compelled to go to Anfield.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
That I can understand. My wife and I just walked down to Lark Lane. We live in Sefton Park. We walked down to Lark Lane and it was absolutely, it was an outpouring of joy. People didn't know what to do with themselves. There was fellas hanging out of windows and standing on top of phone boxes. And it was just glorious. It was exactly what you'd expect. And as far as I'm aware, there wasn't too many arrests or trouble or anything on Thursday. I think it was just a celebration. But that premeditated, we're going out on Friday night, in the middle of lockdown, I can't get behind that. Whether it was families looking to soak up some atmosphere and sell, I can't get behind that, because it doesn't have that quality that you spoke about, that feeling of being compelled. Me and my wife had to get out of the house on Thursday evening and go and sing some songs. That we had to do that. I don't agree with people going out on Friday night, and you certainly can't use an excuse that you had to go, because you've had 24 hours to digest the knowledge that we've won the league. So it's premeditated, which makes it even worse. Look, it's just, you know, I get it. People have been cooped up. People want to be with their mates. People want to let off some steam. It's the same reason that people are going to these illegal raves all over the place. Like, I get it. I totally fucking get it. But don't do it in the name of my football club. And don't leave a sour taste in Jurgen Klopp's mouth and make him have to reference it in a letter, an open letter to Liverpool fans. That's not cool.
That was what the frustrating thing was for me. It's just that the manager and the players had asked one thing of us. They'd asked us just don't, basically that they'd said don't be dickheads. And I kind of get the Thursday thing, although even for me, still, you know, I would see myself as hypocritical to not criticise even the Thursday after I criticised VE Day. And I criticised other things going on. So for me, the Thursday was still quite frustrating. But I'm conflicted with myself in the sense of, sorry, Jane, I'm conflicted with myself of, if I was living in Liverpool right now and my house was near the bombed out church and there was a gathering there, I don't think I would have been able to resist going out myself. So is my frustration just from the fact that I'm sat at home and I can't do it, and therefore I've got nothing else to do other than look at my phone and go, oh, these people are bad, these people are awful, or whatever. So I was kind of conflicting with myself on Thursday night.
Do you think you can take the kind of emotional context of it though, Ben? Do you think you could? There's an emotional context to it, that it is an outpouring of excitement and joy that you don't get with, like you say, the VE Day celebration.
If you don't mind, just for me, I mean, when Chris mentions whataboutism and stuff, and Bournemouth Beach keeps getting brought up in all these kind of discussions. Friday for me is Bournemouth Beach, because there's no problem with going outside. You're allowed to go outside, and you're allowed to go outside as long as you're socially distanced, and you're allowed to go to those. You are allowed to go to those places, but it's very easy for places like that to get carried away in that regard. And Friday for me is it gets pulled in with those type of incidents where too many people have gone to a space and it's gotten a bit, and it's gotten carried away. Because look, let's be honest, we've been told you can go to the beach, you've been told you can go to parks, you've been told you can do this and that. But if everybody decides to go to Calderstones Park now, then there'd be a mass incident at Calderstones Park. You know what I mean? It's just that there's no reason for everyone to go at once. You know, with regards to beaches, it being sunny was enough reason for most people to do it. But that's why I think that, you know, that it's shades of grey. And I understand if people don't want to see the difference, that's fair, because ultimately they're all mass gatherings and they're all, you know, they're all a bit much in their own way. But
Is the problem, because the rules right now, we're in a funny phase of the lockdown where the rules are just confusing anyway, and that whether that's down to the government and what they're doing or whatever. So I'm almost like, so again, I'm sat there on Thursday or I'm Friday, I'm going, oh, you know, these people shouldn't be doing that or whatever. But also I'm like, I'm running out of reasons or excuses to say that it's wrong, because I don't know what's going on myself. I don't know what the rules are anymore. So who am I to judge? Because,
and we keep finding ourselves throughout the lockdown, is we've all broken the rules, whether we're free to admit it or not. In shades of grey, we've all done things. Maybe it was a day before, you know, some things were announced. We've all been maybe slightly we've all been closer than 2 meters to a person who wasn't in our bubble. Whether that was 1.5 meters or up close and personal, in case of other people and all that kind of stuff. So you're right. There's shades of grey around it, but I think the ultimate point of it for me is that, again, my largest point was that for the Thursday, it was largely the spontaneity. It doesn't excuse it from a wider sense, but again, because it doesn't stop having an excuse doesn't stop COVID transmission.
We were celebrating Liverpool.
Liverpool winning a league title is not PPE. You know what I mean? And it might look more like it than some of the shit the government's offered in the last 3 months. But it isn't. So in that regard, it's both wrong. But yeah, I think it's important to note and for us to say that the people who got out of control, and you look, there was videos going around of like little scallies sniffing cocaine off policemen's hats and all that kind of stuff on that Friday, and that's just lids taking advantage of a mask of a crowd of people to insulate themselves against and them just to do what they would do on a normal mad night anyway. Loads of lids on the limo going mad. Whereas Thursday, I turned up. I think I was at Anfield for half an hour in total, walked around, sang a few songs.
Same.
Got back in the car and went home and had a beer at home and watched Sky Sports News and watched Jürgen cry and all that kind of stuff and got a bit emotional. It was great. And yeah, hopefully we get to see that a bit more up close and personal as and when. I mean, Jürgen and the club have kind of promised us all something more in the coming weeks, and hopefully it can be something that tops everything that we've seen so far. Because I keep saying, the scenes that I saw at Anfield, given the context that we were basically told not to, and given obviously the pandemic and all the things, and the fact that it was a Thursday night and it was not a Liverpool game, and Liverpool weren't even playing at Anfield, Liverpool weren't even playing that night. If that many people chose to take to the streets on that, there's a happiness behind that I can look at. But yeah, hopefully we get to see more and better in the future. Right, Chris, let's move things forward. Liverpool are the champions. There's no escaping that. Regardless of the fact that I may have contracted mega corona in the last few days, which we'll see. Fingers crossed for that, having had that immunity. You want to talk about the Guard of Honour?
Yeah, I think obviously Danny Murphy's been talking about it, hasn't he? And he's been mentioning certain Kevin De Bruyne. And I've seen a lot of people say, like, you know, I don't see the point in the Guard of Honour and all that type of stuff. And I'm just looking at it going, I'd like to know what everyone else thinks. Like, James, do you think it's an outdated tradition, this Guard of Honour thing? Or do you think people are just looking at it going, fucking hell, they've got 7 of them. It's the most that we're ever going to see. Fuck this. I don't want to see that for 7 times, thank you very much. Is it just because Liverpool have won the league so early? Because whenever anyone else wins it, oh, it's not an outdated tradition. Now it's an outdated tradition that Liverpool have won it. What's that about?
After 30 years, I want every Liverpool player and staff member to get a Guard of Honour everywhere they go.
I want it to Lewis's.
Guard of Honour in the bread aisle in Tesco for Andy Robbo. I want a Guard of Honour at the dentist next time that Trent goes and has a scale and polish. They deserve everything. And I get what you're saying about it being a kind of, it's a bit of a throwback, isn't it, really? It's the same with the handshakes before. I've never understood the handshakes before a game. I don't understand why you shake someone's hand that you're about to go into war again. I don't get it. Shake the hand after the game, but not before. But actually, I quite like the Guard of Honour as a tradition. I think it's, you know, there are some parts of history that are kind of kind of nice, man. And I like that your opponents show that respect to you, because they know how hard it is. God, I mean, the City players, they know what it takes to win a title. It's really, really, really difficult. Seven's probably a bit excessive, but let's not pretend.
But you deserve it because you've won it so early. I mean, it's no different if you win it with one game to go. You deserve just one Guard of Honour because you only managed to win the league by more than 3 points. If you win it by more than 20, you deserve loads of Guards of Honours. It's just the way it is. I see it as a reward for me for how good they've been. They get more Guards of Honours than everybody else.
All the Premier League teams should line up from like the coach all the way onto the pitch, and Liverpool have to walk past them all, apart from Watford. Watford don't have to give us one. Because they at least beat us. We'll let Watford off with this one. It's mad. I'd never really thought about it because it's not really... Liverpool haven't been in the conversation.
We've never had to think about it.
Exactly. Like, I think we gave Chelsea one. Yeah, I had a look into it. In 2015, we gave one to Chelsea. It's cool. It's just like a feature of being champions that, I'm kind of cool just to see it and just to experience it and know that Liverpool have had one. I mean, it's a bit weird when you have to give one to the opponents, but I like that Pep Guardiola's not asked. I like that he's like, no, go on, we'll give them a Guard of Honour. And it annoys me because I'd really like to, I really dislike Manchester City fans largely, and I don't really like the way the club's run and all that, but I really like Pep Guardiola, and that annoys me too. I want to hate him more. Him having this touch of class does me no favours here.
No, but I do think that it's all part of like everything that Guardiola said since the title was won, or since the restart really is. I feel like it's all feeding into mind games towards next season. So I feel like he's like, we'll give them a Guard of Honour. Yeah, well, this time we'll give them the Guard of Honour. Then next year they'll be given, with the implication sort of being that, we've accepted defeat this season and we're already looking to next season and all that. I've not really thought about it much because it's never been my problem, because obviously we've never had to go through it. And you mentioned the Chelsea one there that we gave out. Don't really remember that happening. And most years in my life, Man United have won the league, and I was never going to watch them getting a Guard of Honour. So, it's just not something that I've considered, but it'll be nice to watch our lads being congratulated, I suppose. I don't know, is the rule that we get all seven, or is it just the one after you've won the game?
You get it for every game.
Oh, wow.
Right, okay.
Yeah. I think it's an incentive to win the league really, really fucking early. Yeah, I think it's something that the Liverpool players have worked towards. And just on the quick point that Manchester City have accepted it, we handed them defeat this season. They didn't accept it. We forced them into coming second because of our greatness. Don't ever think that Guardiola's accepted something other than what we've given him. And I think the other thing is like the Murphy stuff and the Kevin De Bruyne. I think we spoke about it a little bit on the Untentable Match build-up show for the City game, but obviously Ben, you were on that show with me, Paul James, you guys weren't. Paul, where are you standing on Danny Murphy, and have you heard what he said about the midfield not being fit enough to lace Kevin De Bruyne's boots? Why should he give them a Guard of Honour?
I can't help but feel this might have been one of those situations where Danny Murphy's just said a bunch of words and not really thought about it, to be fair, because like I get it if he's having to give a Guard of Honour to Everton. Like, I mean, there's a legitimate case to be made there. But, I mean, most of Liverpool's squad are fit to lace up Kevin De Bruyne's boots. Let's be perfectly clear about that. As much as he is a phenomenal footballer. The thing about it for me is... Like Ben was saying, it's not been my business. It was like 5 years when I didn't watch a single Champions League game. Wasn't asked because Liverpool weren't involved. On the Man City perspective, I agree with the mind games thing though. I think Pep Guardiola, it's his last hurrah in this. We were talking about it when we were watching the game, Chris, and you could see it in Fernandinho's actions. They desperately wanted to have a competitive game of football against us on Thursday. They wanted to be able to say they weren't going to stop us winning the title full stop, but they were going to delay it, and that way they get to carry that message into next season. And the only thing Pep Guardiola's got left is the motivational tool that is the embarrassment of having his footballers have to stand there and applaud the team that are better than them. And that's the only thing. He'll just be hoping. That's the reason he's agreed to it, I think, deep down, is he's hoping that his players will be have a fire lit in them by this, that they can take forward into next season.
I hope what Guardiola, and I hope more importantly what his squad realises, that there's no embarrassment in finishing second to this Liverpool side, because they are the best team in world football.
Absolutely, absolutely. We've got the trophies to prove it, everything, haven't we? James, you wanted to know what everyone's best and most bitter text was.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of... Sometimes I struggle to come up with a question for these shows, but today I was thinking about everything that I've kind of experienced since Thursday night. And obviously, you know, we're in lockdown, so a lot of that has been texts and DMs and stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm happy to go first. The best message I got was from a fellow Red who lives down in Surrey, and he texted me 5 minutes after we won, all in capital letters with loads of exclamation marks. It says, "I'm crying and I don't know what to do with this." And that just summed up exactly how I felt. I've done a lot of crying. I sort of finally got over the crying, and then I watched your video on your Mate TV channel, Paul, and I fell to pieces again, mate.
Sorry. Sincere apologies.
This is the most bitter text that I received. Now, a bit of context. I think this is one of those that people are forwarding on, because I know the guy who sent it to me, and I don't think he's that bitter. But anyway, I'll read it to you. See if you can guess which team the writer supports. "All that matters to them is being in the public eye and reveling in front of other people in some sense of perceived glory. The fact that the league petered out and most people aren't arsed is like a dagger to the heart for them. If they can't gloat about it meaning more or being unique or somehow better than everybody else's victories, then they lose most of their joy. Everything about them is contrived and about show and image, from their manager to the players, fans..."
Is it Duncan Castle's media, this?
"Fans and media lackeys. Scratch below the surface and they are a sad, empty, mean-spirited, nasty entity. A bastion of socialism, my fucking arse. They are the perfect club for our times. The perfect reflection of Boris Johnson, Donald Trump, Jimmy Savile, et al. Fucking gang of dickheads, the lot of them."
Okay, it's either Duncan Castles or it's Everton, aren't they, on Facebook?
It's from an Evertonian. That's all I know. But
incredible.
That's got to take the prize for most bitter, deluded thing that anyone's ever written.
Imagine being asked to write all that. Honestly. It's such a long message.
Ben Free.
Go on, Ben. I didn't get many bitter messages, but I was kind of alluding to before. I got one message from a Man United fan saying, "Congratulations, mate! Absolutely smashed it this year. As much as it pains me to say it, and I've just been sat on my couch."
Well done, mate.
Those congratulatory messages were the best, because it makes me feel a sense of achievement in something that was ultimately nothing to do with me, really. So there you go.
One of the best ones for me was my uncle, who's the Man United fan. His Facebook status update was just, "Football died tonight. 9 minutes past 10, June 20.
Yes!
Tonight. He has become, it's fucking hilarious. He's become like a running joke in the family about how just wound up he's been. He's been unbearable for the whole time Man United have been on top. He stopped speaking to the family for the entire year that Cantona was suspended. He didn't turn up to family gatherings. It was amazing. I love him. He's crazy. He's actually an all right fella when we're not talking about football, but he has... just his head has gone this year, completely and utterly gone, and he's become really like proper horrible and bitter with it. So me and my cousin have just taken to winding him up in any just the daft, stupid ways, because people who get really aggressively wound up about things the only thing you can ever do to deal with those people is to ignore them or to poke them in as many fun and silly ways as possible. So I sent him a little kiss emoji in reply to that. That's it.
I got a really great one in one of the lads' WhatsApp groups that I'm in, and it just said, and he's an Everton fan, I'll say that for you. And it was the day after, so it was the Friday when all the stuff was going on at the Pierhead. Why would you ever want to win those classless gobshite another title? Which I thought was quite good. That was the bitter one. And the best one was from a Chelsea fan cousin of mine, Londoner, who just said, "You did it in style, fair play," on Thursday evening, like, which I loved. And he even put the trophy emoji on there as well.
Oh, that's absolutely lovely, isn't it?
He was also the first person to text me after Gerrard slipped, so let's not give him too much credit here.
make no mistake, he's a shit, but
at least he's an honest one. Oh, that's fair, that's wonderful. Let us know if you've got any interesting messages or whatever in the comments section underneath, or you can tweet us at the Red Men TV. Just quickly, because we're fast running out of time, Ben, I'm sorry we've left you not with too much time to get through your topic, but you want to know how Liverpool will handle the rest of the season?
Yeah, now, when I've not done one of these podcasts for ages, so when I nominated this topic to Ross yesterday, I didn't realise I was actually nominating myself. I thought I was just throwing an idea into the hat, so I haven't really thought too much about it. But yeah, you know, there's a few different options in terms of the way that we can see out this season. Now, you know, we've got luxury of time in terms of 7 games to go to sort of either go for every record possible, or obviously you've got the benefit of a few kids coming through who, I mean, Nico Williams in particular for me looked outstanding on Wednesday when he came on against Palace. So, you know, what beyond Thursday, because I think he'll play his strongest team Thursday, how do you think the team selections will look? How do you think the lads will be able to maintain motivation to keep going at the relentless pace that they've done all season? You know, and also given that we've not got the Champions League to go for after it, which is a little bit deflating because it would be really good if we had something else to be sort of looking forward to. Do you think that'll make a difference now with the fact that these 7 games are it, you know?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some proper time off. The Champions League can get in the bin for this year. I think it's interesting because we were debating it, but with very little understanding of what Liverpool was going to come back. And obviously then we were talking about it after the Everton game, and when we saw it was a bit of a mismatched side and no Salah and no Robertson, etc. But I'm convinced, and I don't know what you think on this, James, I'm convinced Klopp's going to go flat out. And I think, because I don't think dropping in Nico Williams or Harvey Elliott off the bench means the same as the days when we used to put Danny Pacheco in for the last game of the season. I don't think it's the same as that anymore. I think if a lad comes in, it's not just, oh, go on, you're a young lad, go and get your minutes, go and get your debut, pull the shirt on, son. You've got to go in and play to the same level that's been expected of everyone so far.
Yeah, I completely echo everything you've just said, really, mate. I think if you're part of a match day squad, if you're on the bench, you are as important as everybody else in our manager's mind, and that is, you know, and he's proved that time and time again. Apart from obviously the few cup games when he, you know, his hand was forced. I would expect every single game to be started in the manner with which we've become accustomed to, i.e., strongest starting 11. You know, try and get a lead, and then it becomes a question of right, which lads can I bring on? And but again, like we say, you know, these are really talented boys. It does them a disservice to say, you know, oh, playing the kids. Well, these aren't our, like you say, these aren't our kids. These are, you know, our next world class players. You know, so, but yeah, I'd expect him to completely go for it. He wants the record, and rightly so, man. This is a season for breaking records. It's a squad, it's a club that breaks records. So let's have another one.
100%. Yeah. Chris?
For me, this is probably, this sounds mad to say, but, you know, I've talked about this a few times now over the last few days and stuff, and I've kind of just, the longer I've thought about it, the more I've got to this way of thinking is, this is actually might be the most important part of the season for us, because Klopp has to know how to motivate a side that's already won the league for next year. Well, what better time to fucking do it than this season when the league's already won? Do you know, does that make sense?
Yeah,
like, and clearly it's not as important as the first games and all that, but for a practice run at motivating a squad, you've already done it and won it, this is even better, because there's nothing to win this season other than a few records, which of course they'll want to get. But there's a big Premier League trophy on the line next season. If he gets it right in this part of the season, he'll get it right next season as well.
Yeah, I think that's an absolutely fantastic point. Right, we're going to wrap that up there because I'm very aware that Mr. James Sutton has more important things to do with his life and time.
I've only messed.
Look, you're a busy television staff. We're thankful for the small.
Do you know
amount
what
time
he's going to do? He's going to buy ride a Shadowfax.
A what?
I'm picking up my new car. That's what I'm doing today.
Okay, sounds okay. Well, we'll let you off. That's not more important.
Chris.
I'm quite offended now.
The horse from Lord of the Rings, the Gandalf rides. It's fine, boys.
Wow.
I can get near the occasionally.
There's only very rare circumstances when you do out geek me, and it's normally when you talk about the Lord of the Rings. Right, okay. Thanks to everyone who sent the questions in. I'm sorry, we ran out of time to do them this week. But yes, you can send questions in for the podcast via our Discord group, which you can join if you join as a Club Legend member on the redmentv.com. If you want to support the channel on YouTube, you can do. You can get memberships now, get access to custom emotes, which you can use in our live streams. We will be doing a live fan zone commentary once again for your champions of England, champions of Europe, champions of the world, Thursday evening.
The bad man, Alison Becker. The big dog, Virgil van Dijk.
Your Premier League champions.
Let's not give it away. Let's work on this for the live stream introduction tomorrow, Paul. I think we've got the crux of something great here, mate.
We've got the building blocks of greatness here, Chris. And a handshake as well. 45 minutes before kickoff, we will be live doing our normal bout of commentary, insight, and laughs. So tune in for that. If you want to support everything we do, please do go and subscribe for the excellent additional content. If you want to talk more about the title, there's a title special and what 19 means with me dad and former Liverpool midfielder Jay Spearing, which is on the website, which is absolutely fantastic. Getting Jay's insight into what it means from the inside of the club, what it means to a player who came up through the ranks and stuff. Really, really good stuff indeed. Right, anyway, guys, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you very much for watching, for listening, and for subscribing. And we'll see you all soon. Ta-da.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.